I'm here to answer any of your questions about the budget, and I'm also open to any suggestions that you may have about us, you know, filling in the gaps that we are having a problem with lack of central services money. I heard Stephanie earlier talk about drastic measures of signal swapping or bankruptcy or other things. And, you know, being an employee of Pacifica for over 30 years, I've seen us in good times and I've seen us in bad times, but we are a legacy foundation that not even NPR or anybody else, no PBS station can compare with us because of our history that is in our archives. That's something that is indisputable. And I know that if we make the right choices and good decisions and we're creative in our planning, that we can move out of this and back into the plus, because listeners want to listen to Pacifica. They really want to, and they get driven away by fund drives every month, and they go other places, or perhaps they can't understand the language that a program is spoken in and they go somewhere else. There's a lot of reasons, an infinite number of reasons. They go other places and then they get used to those other places. But in their heart of hearts, they love what Pacifica represents. And the history that's in the archives represents what they love most. The women's movement, LGBTQ movement, Native American movements, environmental movements, civil rights movement, Latin American studies movements. You know, the second wave of feminism, our recordings are incredible. Maya Angelou singing, you know, her poems live for the first time, and Pacifica was there with recordings. I mean, just fantastic stuff. Leonard Cohen, I didn't even know this, but Judy Collins invited Leonard Cohen to perform at a WBAI benefit in 1968. Because he wrote her a song that that became a hit for her. And he went to perform it live, couldn't even get through a couple of stanzas. And he walks off the stage embarrassed. And Judy Collins like, no, that's not going to work. And she grabbed him and dragged him back on the stage, and they sang the song together. And that's part of Pacifica's history. And then he came back later and sang a few more songs and read some poems. I mean, we got some stuff that is really, really rare. And so, again, what I have to say is, if the Finance Committee always thinks of the archives at the top of their list, I know the archives doesn't come to the Finance Committee asking for help very often because, frankly, we've had our books in order for the entire time. We're just being impeded now by things that we can't control. And I'm hoping that not only will you think of Pacifica top of your priority list, but, you know, will, you know, help us with this current situation and start planning for our next budget. That's all I have to say, and I'm open for any questions, and I know Julia will help me if we need any facts and figures. I have the budget in front of me. I can speak about it as well. And I think you all have the budget, too, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mark. That's much appreciated. I think because we are, I think we should probably hold questions. Well, let me just ask the committee. I'm thinking maybe we should go right into the numbers now to make sure we have some time to review that before we start asking questions about the narrative that Mark just gave us. Can I get some discussion on that question?
This is Beth. Kim.
I heard Beth first. Go ahead, Beth.
Yes, I have lots of questions, and I look forward to the chance to get to interact about them, but my questions would be more informed if we go over the numbers first, and it seems important to that we do prioritize getting that information. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Kim?
Well, I have the opposite. I have some questions. I mean, you know, that
that I'd like before we get to the, to that. So either way, I can wait. Doesn't matter.
Anybody else?
This is McFadden.
Or Paul.
All right, I heard Mac first. Go ahead.
So I think I would like to ask just a few, you know, I don't want to ask and give speeches or anything like that, but I would like to have a few questions now to kind of give some perspective before we get into the numbers.
Okay, maybe we could do a short time for questions. Go ahead, Art Paul.
Yeah, I'd say let's hit the numbers, and then we will have, it'll probably answer some questions. So I think we should do the numbers first, and then we can ask all the questions.
All right. Sounds like we need a vote, because that was pretty evenly divided, those comments. So can we have a motion to go either way, and then we'll see where everybody comes out? Can somebody put a motion forward to either hear questions or to go to the numbers?
Beth, with a motion to start with the numbers and then go to questions.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? Okay. Arpal, can we go to a vote then, and we'll see where everybody stands?
Why don't you ask if there's any objection?
Is there any objection? Good. Thank you, Arpal. Any objection? Hearing none? Okay. Let's go to the numbers. And, Julie, I guess that's where we would ask you to step in.
Nope, that's all Mark. I'm just here to help support his very good presentation. I know that it was mostly narrative, but, I think he'll be fine going through the numbers, and I'm here to validate what he's, you know, so everybody feels comfortable. I mean, I think in a nutshell is that really a lot has not changed, as he said, revenue and expenses. And what is hurting is not the income statement and the presentation of the income statement. It's the cash flow statement and the fact that, while they are generating the revenue that they need to balance their budget, they don't have the cash flow to back it up because people are not paying their bills, which is, you know, a completely different thing from having a budget.
Let me just say about the numbers, our total expenses, which everybody can see in line 30, is $318,000 a year. That amounts to about, we're a little over $9,000 per payroll every 2 weeks. And, we're very streamlined in that. We have $208,000 in central services income, and then we have fundraising that that brings to over $318,000. We would be in the positive each year if everybody paid. At this moment, we are $73,000 down in central services money, and the majority of that is KPFK. WBAI is next, and KPFT. KPFK is $34,000 to date. WBAI is $29,000 to date. KPFT is $9,500 to date for a total of $73,000. And, of course, that will increase as we get to the end of every month. So that's all.
Can somebody mute?
So that really is, as said, that's our main deficit. We had no money in our bank account up to April 26th, and April 26th we had a fund drive that gave us $40,000. That's good for another 2 months worth of expenses, and. And with KPFA paying and WPFW paying, you know, that helps us with almost one payroll. So we're still under financial stress, and And those are really the main blaring numbers. It's not rocket science with our budget because we don't have a lot of line items that are extraordinary. Most of our expenses come from, well, actually, we have storage. We have about 30,000 tapes in three different storage facilities that we can't fit into the archives. And one of the projects I'm working on is working with a university in Los Angeles to help us digitize the remaining 50,000 tapes, and that would allow us to go into those storage facilities and start, you know, taking those tapes out and closing those storage accounts. But we spend about $2,500 a month on storage of these tapes. So, you know, our operating expenses are very streamlined. It's a majority is payroll. And, you know, our revenue streams come from duplicating our tapes, sending them out as thank you gifts. People who listen to these programs on the five stations and call to get copies. And a lot of our fundraising is our own annual fundraiser, which averages around $60,000 every year. And this fiscal year, we've actually had to do two, so we've raised $100,000. But again, we're still fighting against central services money not being paid. And again, as I said, we would have other revenue streams coming in if I can concentrate on getting a few other programs up and running, like our digital streaming website.
Thank you, Mark. I guess now we should, I'm kind of feeling a little bit of hunger for more discussion of the numbers, but if we don't have it in the offing, I guess we can go to questions. Julie, did you want to say anything more about the numbers, or do you think they speak for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, if you have specific questions, James, I mean, I think they do speak for themselves. I mean, I think that the only thing that I could see, and it's a question that I had failed to ask Mark, and I could kick myself for not doing it before, is, you know, if you were in a position where you had to do another fund drive, or until, you know, we're not going to be able to snap a finger and get caught up on these central services, what are the, I know what the, some of the cons are of having another fund drive, but if you looked at your budget and said, okay, you know, the one that you had in November was a little less than you had budgeted, but we know having this extra one is going to compensate for that and give you a little more, you know, what's the damage potentially if you did have another fund drive, you know, come September or something, trying to offset the fact that, you know, the collections of the central services is challenging?
Yeah, there's some things we could do. It's possible. Berthold reached out to me from WBAI, and, you know, he wanted me to do a fundraiser monthly on his station. And, you know, it takes a lot of work to do a fund drive. I think he wanted to originally do it for many hours. And, you know, our little staff is really stressed when it comes to doing a fund drive. We have to get volunteers, phones, production, all that, you know, 30 days to get a 15-hour fund drive together. But, you know, we made it a little different, you know, as kind of a pilot program where we do maybe, I pre-produce a one-hour show for WBAI where the funds go straight to the archives and, you know, can help defray some of those costs. And, you know, that might be a pilot program that we could use at the other stations that do not pay central services. But if I had to do one on all five stations, I mean, we would do it. It's a lot of work. And, you know, I'd have to start working on it now because I need new. But it's definitely doable.
So just
but,
to clarify,
you know,
for everyone who's listening, so was that suggestion from WBAI to help compensate for the fact that they can't fund central services? So it would be you come on and and ask people to fund it for them?
I mean, it's not really. I'll tell
is
you
that
this
the thought that it would.
If I could jump in on that, I think I could help explain that. I was part of the thinking on that. The idea would be, since WBI is doing these one-hour preemptions in the so-called 52-week schedule, rather than doing long 30, 34-day fund drives, which tend to drive the listeners away, we're sprinkling these things throughout the schedule with the same hours devoted to fundraising, but in a less concentrated format that seems to, we're hoping, will scare away the listeners a little less. But the idea here is to produce a one-hour program that can be dropped into one of those preemption spots. And the preemption is every 4 to 6 weeks a program is preempted and a fundraising program is put in there. The hope would be that the producers can create their own fundraising programs that would be attractive to their own audiences and put them in there. But with in the absence of that, we do these other things, and instead of putting in a Gary Knoll special or a Christine Blasdale special where they're raising money based on products or some other, you know, item, that we would have something from Pacifica, from the archives, that would be perhaps a little more in sync with our core listeners' values, and that could generate some income. And the money, instead of going to WBAI and then, you know, being spent on their budget, it would go straight to the archives to cover what WBAI owes for their central services to the archives.
McFadden,
did that answer your question?
Yes.
Good. Okay, are there any other questions?
McFadden, Jack.
Go ahead.
And then Kim.
I hear you, Penn. Go ahead, James.
So I was, I was trying to make sure I understood what you were talking about, because I understand, you know, if you had to set up phone banks and everything else for a fund drive, but it's often struck me that, you know, some of the best programming I've heard on in KPFA has been archive material. And what I don't quite get is why stations don't have an archive hour once a week. And it seems to me that you would, you know, someone like yourself, which knows these wonderful programs, once you've formatted it, you don't need to have people on phones for it. You wouldn't run it like a fund drive. You would just run it and several times during the show, just have a announcer, and it doesn't have to be a live announcer, it should be a recorded announcer saying, you know, if you like this show, you know, and we need to keep these archives alive, and here's the website, and just list the website that to go, and the money that would, when you go to that website and you donate, it would go directly to the archive effort, you know, bypass the stations. And if it's successful, that money could eventually come back to the stations too, you know, and it would be basically be in lieu of the of central services. And see, I've always thought an archive show itself, not done as a fund drive, but just have the advertisements in it, you know, to remind people, hey, you like this, you know, we need to keep these things around. And I'm wondering what you think of that.
Well, you know, one of the first programs that I worked on as the senior producer was a program called Voice of Pacifica. I started that, I think, in 1995 or 6, somewhere in there, and it went for about 6 years, and I think we have a little over 200 episodes of that. It was a weekly show. And then I started producing a show called From the Vault, and I had to stop producing that when I became director because of all the other responsibilities. But it didn't really generate a lot of revenue. I mean, we put our 800 number for people to get copies. It did really well during our national fund drive when we put it in a package. Like we put the Voices of Pacifica collection and the From the Vault collection on our 64 gigabyte jump drive. And before that jump drive gift, we just had our From the Vault collection and Voices of Pacifica collection of over 200 hours. And people really loved the collection because of the people that were involved. But the single episodes never really generated enough revenue to really amount to anything, really. So I would never want to do that in lieu of or in place of Central Services money. The numbers don't match up there. But what it did do was it gave the archives a profile on each station. I thought it was good programming to have to connect our listeners with our institutional history that helps them connect better with current programming. And a lot of programmers come to me and ask me to be guests on their show. Margaret Prescott does it regularly. Mitch Jezerich does it from time to time. And others. And it's of great value to our listeners to know and remember and be reminded, and for new listeners to be amazed that Pacifica has been around for a long time doing really great work, opening our mics up to incredible people, taking huge chances, putting on people that, you know, considered FBI problems, like Dr. Martin Luther King and the late 50s, you know, or putting on a Rosa Parks or a Fannie Lou Hamer or an Allen Ginsberg when we get an indecency charge, or George Carlin. One of the recordings in our archives that I made into Voices of or From the Vault was George Carlin, who held a benefit show for WBAI the Monday after he hosted the very first Saturday Night Live. I mean, George Carlin was the industry standard of awesome, funny, and he knows that we're going to court and we're going to pile up some serious lawyer bills. So as the top comedian on the planet and the coolest one in New York, he hosts a benefit show for WBAI for 2 hours, and we have that recorded. So, yes, it's good programming, but it's not really good revenue-generating show to show.
Jim.
Okay, I got a couple of questions. Let me ask the easiest one first, and I'll let you answer this, and then I'll ask the other ones. On what line, hi Mark, by the way, this is Kim from your downstairs, you know, deadbeat. nothing I can do about that, Mark. What line is the licensing revenue on?
That is included in, let's see, where are we? Licensing does not have a specific line right now. And to tell you the truth, I would like to put it in because we know exactly how much money is being generated each month from licensing. But that's coming in income online. Let's see, where are we?
Is it 17?
No.
I didn't know if it was buried in the premium sales.
No,
No, it's not in premium sales. It's in...
It's okay. I can ask Mariana later. No problem. So listener support on line 8 was a high in 2015 and 2017. Okay, those 2 years were like a real high. And then from the stations, line 2016 hit a high in 2017 and 18. So what happened in those years, and then what happened in the other years when it was like way less than half? Do you recollect?
Yeah. For line 16, premium sales to stations,
yeah,
those were the main years that they were using our 64 gigabyte Voices That Changed the World drive. Like, for 3 years, they were like, woohoo. And if we made $194,000, you multiply that, we were only charging them the amount that it cost us to buy the drive and a small amount of charge for the duplication. So they were making the lion's share of the money, and that's why we raised, you know, $4.2 million. It was mostly concentrated when that gift started in 2015, and the stations were leery about using it as a gift, and then started to. One station used it, I think KPFK, and then KPFA was number two, and then everybody was like, we want to use it. So after a few years, I think stations themselves tire of using something and move on to other things. But
yeah,
we're that's the only gift that we use, and we do well with it every year.
So would any of the shows that you produced in past years be rebroadcastable? Evergreen?
it's possible, but our pitches were so different and our gifts were so different.
No, I'm not talking about the pitches or the gifts, like when you produced From the Vault. I mean, you did some, I think Brian did some. It was like a regular half-hour show. I think it was on KPFK when I first got on the board, or certainly was offered to affiliates and stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I produced every single one. Brian was the narrator. I wrote the copy.
Uh-huh.
And
I see.
And Brian. But yeah, all of those programs, both Voices of Pacifica and every episode of From the Vault, are all on AudioPort. And people do use them from time to time. But yeah, I mean, we have like close to 400 From the Vault and over 200 Voices of Pacifica. So yeah, there's a lot of shows that are already, you know, produced and ready to go. Some may be a little dated, you know, because a lot of times we're trying to tie in a current event with, you know, this historic recording. But but yeah, they're all pre-produced and still ready to go.
Okay. Just in terms of, you know, people looking for shows, I mean, it seems like there's some probably good evergreen shows there to plop in, you know, when a station needs a half an hour. That are really new to our listeners at this point, even, you know, notwithstanding the fundraising. And I have one more question. So this online streaming Pacifica Digital thing, what would that do and how would that raise money?
Well, we started a pilot program of using our audio in three history classes in Cal State LA. And they're currently still in those classes.
What's his name? Leakey did.
Yes, this is Lamont.
Lamont, yeah, Lamont's thing, right?
And when we first started, we used to go to his history classes in person, make a presentation. And I don't know, I went to UCLA. I went to the used bookstore, and those, you know, math and science books were still like over $100 where that was what our rent was. You know, I mean, books are so ridiculously expensive, but Lamont Yeakey would require that each student purchase 2 CDs that had 10 archival programs on that were relevant to his course. And we would make a presentation, and the kids would buy the two CD set for $20. And, you know, we were making about $2,500 for two semesters from each class. And when you do the numbers, holy crap, like that's $2,500 for three history classes. What if we were in three more like women's history classes and three Native American classes and, you know, and so forth and so on and so forth. So how this streaming would work is kids now don't even know what a CD is. They fling them like a Frisbee. They don't have CD players and laptops anymore. Everybody listens to everything on their phones, on their iPads. They use earphones, you know, Bluetooth headphones. They need to stream stuff like Spotify and iTunes. Everybody listens to everything, podcasts.
Right, right. So this thing would be for academic use, right? Not other use. That's what this thing is right?
That's a good question, Kim. But in actuality, I would like after, you know, that was its initial use. But I also think that it would be an effective fundraising tool. In fact, we would offer it as a regular monthly streaming service like Spotify, like Apple Music, like all these other digital platforms. And we would offer for, you know, $10 a month, $20 a month access to our audio. And we would add new things each month or each week. And that would be a great fundraising tool. I know it would be a great fundraising tool because I told this idea when I first became director in 2015 to Brian David at KPFA. And I said, I got this idea. Will you help me do it? He's like, yeah, man, I could help you do it. And then, you know, I started to, you know, we had our fund drive. And when I came back after our November fund drive of 2015, he said, I don't have time. I can't do it. But you know what he did do? He took my idea.
I don't know. I want to know. Yeah.
And he put it on the KPFA website. So now... Mm-hmm. They have a gift for everybody who donates. They get one of the archived programs streamed on their website or access to it. And it's like, I'm pulling my hair out here. I have this great idea and I have nobody to execute it. But, you know, but who did? The guy I told the idea to. And who benefits? Not us, but KPFA does. So I think it would be a really great revenue stream for monthly subscriptions that would help the archives also. But yes, if we got into multiple universities, I mean multiple classrooms in even one university or the entire LA Unified School District, oh my God, this is like an untapped gold mine that nobody has thought of and nobody has been able to execute. But I'm close, and I just need a person to help me get this site together, and your financial problems are solved.
Mark, I'm going to ask you to hold on that, shall we say, glorious note. And we have our Paul on the stack, but I see that we're running out of time, and I want to know if anyone would like to offer a motion to extend.
Beth.
I'd like to move to extend for 15. This is Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Beth, I'm sorry? So I heard a motion for 15. I heard some other things, but I couldn't make out what was being said. Is there any objection? Hello?
This is McFadden. I just wanted to get on the stack.
Me
too.
Okay, you're on the stack. Anybody, is there any objection to extending for 15 after 10:15? That would be to 10:30. Hearing none, we'll extend to 10:30 at this point. Thank you.
Please add Beth to the stack.
Beth, I got you.
Thank you.
And let's go to Art Paul now.
Okay. One second. Okay. Looking at the budget as presented here, the bottom line is you're projecting ending FY22 with about $22,000 in the black. And looking through that line, I'm looking at, line 41 here. Looking through that, I could see that, scrolling slowly through this particular part, the big difference of it is there are a lot of months with losses, but the November on-air fundraiser is what really made the big difference. And so I could see where those are the real things that are helping you out, that are keeping PRA going. And yeah. I would think maybe, trying to get Pacifica to put, you did one, right, in April?
Yeah, we did one in November.
November and April. The November one did 62. I think you said the April one did 40?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. And maybe you could get, three times a year, isn't it, shouldn't be a horrifying burden. And I think maybe Bertold's idea of, pre-canning something and putting it in might work. It could also be simply a thing of you provide the product and one of the better pitchers would, basically do the pitch. Because, that makes a difference. You can have one premium and it bombs because somebody doesn't pitch it too well, the next person picks it up and they make a lot of money. So that might be a very good idea for how to do that. And I think if you can get the that streaming website going, it sounds like that would be a very good idea. And maybe we should the PNB should take up the idea, and because I know they have some fundraising stuff going on, and maybe they could get the dough to get this done. I'm sure there are people who would be able to, if not totally donate, at least do the website for less than $100,000. I'm hoping you will be able to do that, and I am thinking that probably a third on-air fundraiser would really help PRA there. And so that's my thought. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Art Paul. Beth?
Thank you. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
This is Beth Von Glinton. I'm from up near Ojai, and I sit on the KPFK LSB and on the PNB. And I chair the National Development Task Force. And so first, before anything else, I'd like to invite you to come talk with us. We meet every month, the fourth Monday of each month. Our next meeting will be May 23rd at 5:30 p.m. And then, if that works for you, or any other time, or every other time, if you'd like to take part on a regular basis. But we talk about a lot of these same ideas there and would love to sort of work with you to flesh them out. In particular, I'm thinking that it might be useful to us as a task force and you as the archive to put together, given that I'm from KPFK too, we could put together an ongoing local support group. To be available, to be trained and ready when you need people to populate an event or a project or whatever. We could do that. That's a doable thing. So I'll contact you afterwards, and we can talk about when you might be available to meet with us. As the development task force. And beyond that, there are a lot of these ideas I'd be interested in talking further about with you one-on-one. I see PRA as clearly a prime Pacifica asset, almost like buried treasure, because I know it's there, but we just don't have that much contact with it. It's surprising to me to hear you say that it was never meant to be a fundraising unit. I mean, I've only been on the boards for the last 2.5 years, but I think that if ever that was a realistic perspective, it's hard to see it that way given the world we live in now. The lay of the land for nonprofits in general and for broadcast radio and for public media in general, it's all changed and everybody's having a hard time, and it's kind of an all hands on deck moment. So I see an integral Pacifica as necessary, and I worry that each of our individual units seem to be more or less sort of siloed. Given that the stations generate or have generated in the past all the material that's in the archives, it seems reasonable that the archives would reciprocate and that you'd work together. They can provide the outlet for the material there, and together you can use it to generate income where it's needed. And I think it's not so much that other units aren't willing to pay as that they're just no longer in a position to pay. They're hardly in a position to cover their own expenses given the way we're configured today. So there's a lot to talk about in this. I'm very interested in hearing, if not tonight, if there's not enough time tonight, then in further dialogue with you after this. Anything else you want to say about other potential revenue streams? I know that one of the potentials that comes up at various meetings that hasn't been pursued yet would be NFTs. And I know I'm a little, just by nature, I'm a little skeptical of STEM sort of right out of the gate. But given the dire straits we're in, I don't think we can afford to dismiss that possibility without exploring it to the full extent of the potential. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about NFTs and whether you've looked into the possibility. And there's more after that, but let's start with that one. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for sending the offer to assist the archives, because there are many areas in which we would enjoy your support, and I would be happy to speak at one of your meetings. So we'll just confirm the date on our schedules and make sure I'm available. And then about NFTs, that one is particularly tricky because it deals with copyright ownership, and Pacifica materials are in a lot of gray area. But one thing is for sure, and that is we own the master rights on many of our recordings, unless we gave them away or somebody, you know, like Alice Walker in the early 2000s when we were having an internal Pacifica battle. Alice Walker removed the rights to use her materials, and we, as the archives, said, okay, we respect you, Alice Walker, we love you, and we'll stop playing your materials. And then when it was resolved, she gave us back the rights, but NFTs have to deal with both sides of a particular recording, which is master and publishing. And in a lot of areas, Pacifica does not own the publishing of certain materials. So NFTs, you know, they want the value in NFTs is that there's a unique thing that somebody can now own, like the first and only thing. And that would restrict how we would be able to use these materials in other ways, like in our thank you gifts and airing without you know, people's permission. So, you know, NFTs is tricky because of the publishing rights, and the fact that we have so many other opportunities to make way more money than to be, you know, selling one of our recordings to somebody at the highest bidder rate, which, you know, it's unclear what that rate would be. But I wouldn't want to restrict any of our recordings, because the value of our recordings is our entire collection. And I think I've stated enough revenue streams that would, I think, way outpace pursuing NFTs and compromising our collection in some way. But it was something to think about, because some people were, you know, selling NFTs at ridiculous rates. But I think that was just far and few between, rather than the norm. Are my thoughts.
Chris Corey to the stack.
Okay, Chris, I just want to mention before you go ahead that we are going to be coming up on our time limit shortly, and we do need to decide whether or not we want to approve this draft budget for consideration by the PMB. I just want to put that in there. So if we get towards 10:30, somebody may need to make a motion to extend, or perhaps we can get to it sooner. Go ahead, Chris.
And wait, on the stack before Beth.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, James.
Sorry, yep. James McFadden, you're right. I had you, and I skipped over it. So, Chris, do you mind if James goes?
Not at all.
I'm going to try to go really fast here, because if you don't know the answer, that's fine. Just, you know, just give me your best guess. Short answers is what I'm looking for. To set up your website streaming, what do you estimate the cost to be, roughly?
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. The rocket scientist from JPL, who is a friend of Pacifica, was going to do it for $3,000. But I've gotten bids from when Brian David declined to do the job. He gave me a few contacts of some of his buddies that work in Silicon Valley. And those estimates range from 50 to 100,000.
Mark, yeah. I'm just going to ask you to leave out the names of Pacifica people, if you could, please.
Sure. Okay.
That kind of like corresponds to my understanding, because we do stuff like that with the laboratory I work at.
If people have done this before, they will. I only want to work with somebody who's done this before. I don't want anybody to try and reinvent the wheel. That's what costs a lot of money. It has to be somebody that's already done a audio stream website somewhere. That has to be, that's one requirement to be eligible to even work on this at all.
Got it. I just wanted to get a rough idea of the cost. I was not, looking to, the second was, you're doing some digitization of the archives continuously. I thought I'd heard that. And if so, are you digitizing? Are you doing it by priority, like you're doing the most important shows first, or are you doing it by the age? How do you decide which ones are getting digitized first?
Well, you know, we did it by selecting what we considered the most important recordings that we have. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, W.B. Du Bois, James Baldwin, Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, those type of big ticket names. And the pandemic kind of put a crunch on that. We weren't in the office as much, but I would say that we actually have stacks of orders lined up from people who want particular things and are paying to get them digitized, which, by the way, if they buy a program, it's $18. If they get something that's not digitized yet, we charge them $50 to digitize plus the program. So when somebody says, I want like 100 programs that aren't digitized, we have to go through this whole process of checking out the tape stock and et cetera. There's potential baking depending on the tape stock. So to answer your question simply, we haven't been able to, for the most part, choose what we digitize. We have so many orders piled up for people who want things that are not digitized yet and actually make us a little more money. So
That sounds great. That gives me a sense of how that makes sense. Then the last thing is a technical question. When you were talking about the budget, you were saying there's a number of unpaid central services. And when I was trying to look at the spreadsheet, I didn't see, it looked like central services were being paid by all the stations. At least that was in your budget. But is it the budget doesn't reflect when they don't pay, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a question that Julia can answer. The accounting of it does not reflect that it's not paid, but our records, Mariana has records back to 2000 for 22 years, and she has every penny that everybody ever paid or didn't pay. So Julia right. can answer the actual accounting procedure on that line.
Before Julia does, or before Beth, before Chris goes, we're now at 10:30, and I think we need to...
Move to extend for 10.
Thank you, Chris. Is there any objection to extending for 10? Hearing none, we'll be extended.
Question. What is that just for this item? Because we still haven't gotten over the P&Ls yet.
Do that tonight.
Yeah, well, we ran out of time. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
I know Julia worked very hard to get them ready.
So this is just to extend for this agenda item.
Well, I'm ready to stay longer.
It's to extend the meeting. So if we can get through this item, I would happily yield that time to the remaining items on the agenda.
Well, I would move to extend for a half an hour myself to get through the P&L.
So why don't we seek that as an amendment, Kim?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And did I hear somebody else seeking to speak? Okay, so we've got a motion to extend for half an hour. Is there any objection? Hearing none, I want to say wow, thank you. Thank you all very much. That's good. And let's try to pick up the pace. We've been kind of engaging in multiple questions and long
Chair,
answers. So let's try and
Mr.
pick it up.
Chair,
go ahead,
yeah, you still have to. That was an amendment. Now you have to deal with the main motion.
Oh, yes. One of these days we'll figure that out, our Paul. I appreciate that. So now we have to go to the main motion. Is there any objection to the main motion extend for half an hour? Hearing none, that's done, and I still thank everyone for that. So, Julia, you were asked a direct question. Chris, do you mind if Julia answers that before you go ahead?
No, I don't, Chair.
Thank you, Chris. So, Julia, if you have an answer for that, we'd appreciate it.
Yes. Based.
In fact, I know you do. Are you breaking up, Julia?
I can answer the question too, James. I'm really familiar with this particular problem.
Let's let Julia try to recover her microphone.
Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see if she can get through.
Are you there with us,
better?
Julia? Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Pacifica uses, as most nonprofits do, uses accrual-based accounting and not cash-based accounting. So we record the revenue as it's incurred, just like we, you know, would record the expense as it's incurred. That's why we also keep spreadsheets that tally to the trial balance for what is owed. And for example, so I believe Mark had said it was about $73,000 that had not been paid year to date. So if you kind of wanted to convert the budget to cash, you know, you would have to take that $73,000 year to date off the bottom line. But that's not really how we do it. We need these organizations, these units, to be paying that. It is an incurred intercompany liability that we record, and we track the cash you don't track cash through the budget or through the income statement. Probably more convoluted than you wanted to hear, but that's how it works.
The issue was is I didn't see any unpaid essential services for the last this fiscal year on the budget. You know, lines 32-36.
You didn't see what?
I didn't see any it looks like they've all paid the essential services.
You're not going to see that. You don't see that on the income statement. You wouldn't be able to see that. I on the email.
James, can I intercede?
Well, let Julia go ahead.
There's been four questions thus far, and I'd be happy to actually elaborate on this question that's on the floor right now as well. But sure, I will continue waiting, even though I think it's against proper procedure to have four questions answered by the same questioner.
Oh, I get it, because you were on the stack waiting, and you did allow us to go ahead. I appreciate that. Julia, do you mind if Chris goes ahead and gives us an answer for this?
My only comment was I sent out the spreadsheet that's used to track what's not paid, and that's just for fiscal year 22. I believe the archives is actually owed about $240,000 over the past 2 or 3 years.
Okay, Chris, do you want to go ahead?
Yes. So the direct answer to your question, James, is that no, you will not see that reflected, the amounts paid versus the amounts owed. What you will see is the amounts owed, whether they are paid or not. So it isn't a true reflection of what's actually going on a cash basis in any of the units. On the expense side, you will see expenses incurred on the part of a unit such as WBAI, whether or not it pays those expenses. So this is a problem with reading these reports, is that you have to understand that. And the reconciling document would be a balance sheet. And periodically, we have a report that's prepared by Julia or whoever the CFO happens to be that helps us understand this by showing unpaid balances for central services and to PRA. And that will get you to where you need to go if you're looking for, you know, how these individual units are performing on a cash basis. But you're absolutely right in questioning this, and absolutely right in wondering whether it, you know, these things are paid, because there is actually no way of telling by looking at those reports. But I would also point out something else, and that's that we're talking about budgets here. And if you're writing a budget, you expect to get paid. So if you're not getting paid, there's a problem. And I think this problem has been well articulated by the person who is presenting the budget today. And I think each individual station should work on that problem. Having said all that, I wanted to just say that I appreciate the questions you asked, because one of them was the one I was planning on asking, which is namely what the cost of putting this thing up is. And the reason that I'm so interested in it is if it were up, I would subscribe. And yeah. I'm imagining that there are a fair number of people out there that have this exact same feeling. Half of the reason I joined this organization and made the sacrifices that I've made over the past 4 years is because of PRA. I don't know if anybody else feels that way or not. I'm speaking personally here. Half the reason I am here tonight, half the reason I have done the work I've done for Pacifica is for the archives, because I just see them as important, like beyond my ability to really breathe life into the word important. And I really hope that you can get this up. I would suggest that you should write a proposal to present at the PNB with the budget that you feel that you need to get this project done, and see if we could get it through, because if we can monetize the resources of the archives a little bit better and make them more self-sufficient, it would not only help the archives, I think it would help Pacifica. Thank you.
Well, thanks for that support and those comments. I really appreciate that. That touches me deeply. And I don't get touched that deeply that often. So I appreciate that.